have to forgive the dishwasher running in the background. It's starting to drain now, but I thought I could catch it at a perfect time. This episode a little bit delayed. I had to record this early in the morning. I was having an error with Audition. Well, not just Audition, any Adobe app on my computer, and had to restart, re-download some stuff, and that seemed to fix the problem. So appreciate you guys bearing with me. I'll keep this one brief because this one is over an hour long, and I don't want to keep around too long. So hope you all are doing well. Of course, I want to thank our Patreon supporters right now off the bat. Eric Gibson, Tyler Stutzke, Jay Stancil, Roger Horn, and Alec Morgan. Those are all our supporters. If you want to join that list, you want to support the show for $3 a month, you can go over to patreon.com/SIDcast, and you can pledge a little bit and keep the show going, because I do spend $20 out of my own pocket every month. Not so much now, considering we have these fine people that have decided to help the show out a little bit. But yeah, like I said, any little bit helps. We'll be working on some more stuff, getting some, we're actually halfway done with this season. And then, you know, we'll take a little bit of a break, and then we will, come back for, what is it? Season 5, I guess, is what it'll be in the summertime. So, don't worry about that, but yeah, we're going pretty strong here. As you can tell by the title, we have two people on today. It's something that I've done maybe one other time, I think, on this show, and it's definitely stuff that I'm absolutely interested in doing, like, in the future, having multiple people on. But we do have a couple people from Evansville today, and the main reason why I wanted to have them on is because all the incredible things that they have done at Evansville, and they'll get to talk about one of the coolest moments of their careers, and I'm sure a basketball game that you all remember from the 2019-20 season, how they handled that, how they handled the attention, the pressure, the trending, the hashtags, the everything. In addition to having their own podcast that you can listen to, Power 5 Mentality, P5 Mentality, that I'm sure a lot of you have heard about. So they'll talk about the beginnings of that. Before we get into that, make sure you get signed up for our newsletter, sidcast.substack.com. And it costs nothing, and you get episodes to your inbox. And that's what it is, and that's all it is. So, and that comes every Thursday, obviously. So, I got the Patreon, I got the Substack. What else do I need? I think that's about it. So I'm going to stop rambling for you guys, and let's just get right into episode 169 of SIDcast with Emily McMillan and Scott Peace of the Evansville Purple Aces, and how their show started and why it started right here on SIDcast.
Well, the idea of like a Power 5 mentality is something that I kind of brought with me from Missouri State, where I did grad school, because I was at Power 5 programs before that. And I at Missouri State, I was just like, why can't we do the same stuff that Power 5 programs are doing? And so that's kind of something I brought to Evansville. Scott and everybody in external have already kind of operated that way. And that was one of the reasons why I really liked Evansville. But during quarantine, about end of March, early April, I made a graphic as part of like a day kind of challenge. And the graphic said, Power 5 is just a mentality. And just because I was bored in quarantine. And so I posted it on Twitter, and Scott DM'd me, and he's like, are we about to make a podcast? And, and so I think it was collaborative, but I kind of had that thought a few years ago, kind of tried to build off of that.
What was kind of your guys' initial challenges starting?
I don't want to talk all of it, but I don't know if initial challenges. I think Scott and I were on the same page pretty much from day one with it. Within like a couple days, we had a website and Twitter and all of that. I think probably the initial challenges was just figuring out how to post it on like Anchor and how to market it and how we wanted to do it and grow a base, which we were able to do that pretty quickly because it's very niche kind of a topic, mid-major marketing.
I would just say that it's honestly, it was a lot easier than I think either of us thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's easy for me to say, cause I'll admit Emily does do a lot more with it than I do. So, that may be part of it, but, if this is something anyone out there is thinking about doing and it may seem like you can't do it or just seems like too big of a challenge, I promise you it's probably not as hard as you think. I think the hardest thing for us has been, especially now that we're in the swing of things, has just been finding time to do it. I know we're fairly new, but we have definitely not had any shortage of guests or people who want to be on or things like that. It's just more finding time that works for all of us. Luckily, Emily and I schedules are almost identical, at least on the work in the work sense with the games and stuff. So that helps. But it's just been a lot of fun so far.
Good. I know that my initial thing was like, how am I going to do it? A lot of it was technical because I was young and I had absolutely no clue what I'm doing now sitting here in front of a microphone. But I do kind of want to get into the COVID discussion with y'all. And this is something that I think I've interviewed 3 or 4 times already prior to this, just for this season. It's for you guys. You're actually my second interview of the day. And you say finding time. So it's 9 o'clock for me. So yeah, we'll make time. We'll always find time to do it. So people are hesitant to do things. And I think that COVID gave people no excuse. I remember when I was in COVID, I was in my hometown still doing my job search and everything like that. And I went to Lowe's and I remember like everything at Lowe's being sold out. Because nobody has an excuse not to do their housekeeping. I don't know if y'all feel the same way, but this is definitely a perfect time for me, at least, to get into something that you're interested in.
Yeah, I think for me, like, you're right. We did all sorts of projects. You know, I started running every day all of a sudden. Of course, that's already gone by the wayside now that we've started back up. But it was weird. It was just, I mean, especially in our industry, both of you understand that it's just time that we've never had and honestly probably will never have again, and hope we don't, because that means something's probably going wrong again. But certainly not a good thing by any stretch of the imagination what's been going on. But for the first time, I think a lot of people were able to really take a breath, reset, and spend some time on other things that are important too.
Yeah, it was weird. I live by myself, and so like not being able to be around people was really hard for me, even though I'm a complete introvert. But it like made me focus on the things that like actually mattered. And I also got a cat. So that was a good, good byproduct to a very, very bad situation.
Talk to me about your guys' quarantine, because we've had this discussion with a couple people now. And I had this discussion today about, living in our own heads. Cause like you said, Emily, you're an introvert, but you kind of miss being around people. I'm the same way. I hate people, but if I don't see my coaches every day, if I don't see my people in my office every day, like I'm having a bad day, you know. And even if one person's gone, like it just feels off sometimes to me. So talk to me about how you guys initially kind of worked through it. Talk to me just about your whole process. And I mean, like, the way you handle the day to day, even.
Well, I rearranged my living room like 10 times in the first week because I was just trying to figure out how to work from home, because like you work from home when you have to like cover a road game, but that's just sitting on a couch and watching the game or whatever you need to do. But it's weird because Evansville is a pretty small athletic department, so pretty much our entire department is within a few feet of each other. And so it was weird not seeing Scott and all of our other friends and coworkers every day. We had a lot of Zoom meetings and just a lot of trying to figure out on the fly how to run a social media account or how to communicate with our fans and while still trying to figure it out ourselves.
Yeah, I think at the beginning it was just kind of figure out what to do. And, you know, it was hard to fill 8 hours a day, especially at the very, very beginning, just because there was nothing going on. As we got into it, I was actually furloughed for a couple of months, which I know a lot of people that are going to be listening to this are in the same boat, or maybe even worse, they lost their jobs completely. So I really, really struggled with that, especially at first. But I kind of looked at it positively eventually that, you know, I do have a job to come back to, and a lot of people aren't as fortunate. So I was really grateful there. And, you know, I kind of made the decision that, you know, if I'm not going to be able to work, the way for me to get through this is to kind of unplug completely from Evansville Athletics, because that had been my life for, you know, almost 7 years at this point, every day working towards that. So having that taken away almost overnight was really, really hard. So the way I kind of dealt with that was just, you know, if I'm going to be out, I need to be all the way out, you know, kind of reset, like I said earlier, and then came back in August. And definitely have a fresh outlook and appreciation on everything.
How hard was it to completely unplug?
It was definitely hard at the beginning, because, you know, there's a lot of emotions that you have dealing with something like that. But I do have a wife and a 5-year-old here at home. So I was not alone, thankfully. Got to spend a lot of quality time, like I said earlier, that we have never had before. So hard at the beginning, honestly hard throughout. It got a little better. Just try to think positively, do things that I normally weren't able to do, and ultimately got through it okay.
Yeah, I kind of want to get back to the Power 5 mentality stuff. I do this all the time, y'all. I start talking about something else and I forget, like, man, I wish I would have asked that question, but I kind of want to get back to that. So obviously this framework of mind, to me at least, isn't just restricted to mid-major, lower Division 1. This could also be applied to the NAI, Division 3, so on and so forth. I learned something from every single episode. I mean, I'm learning in the past 9 minutes from the both of you. So what are some things that you've taken away just in the short time that you guys have done this, and how have you applied it to Evansville Athletics just within the constraints of the episodes?
I think I learned so much from all of our guests. Our guests have been incredible. And I honestly can't say which one is like my favorite I've heard or I've learned the most from, because it's just, I think, so amazing to be able to hear what other people in this industry are doing on a day-to-day basis. And but also, like, I've been able to take like little things out of each episode. Like, for example, Kevin Richardson, who's at Rice, talked about some analytics spreadsheet that he does. And so after our episode, I emailed him and I was like, I need to know how you do that. Because I need to make that and make it happen at UE. And so I think it's such a blessing that we were put in this situation, or like we were able to have the situation that we started this podcast, because our network has never been bigger and we've never been able to learn more, from people like the rising stars in our industry, really.
David, I want to circle back to something you said a second ago about, you know, NAI Division 2, 3 and all that. I know our very specific topic is mid-major Division 1 marketing and creative and all that, but I think Emily would say the same thing. I think the best example of Power 5 mentality really is the Division 2, 3 and so on. You know, the more we've talked to people like that, the more hats those people wear, the things that they're able to pull off with the resources they have is incredible. So while we don't spend a lot of time on that always, I think that's always on the top of mind, and the respect for those people is incredible. But I think kind of selfishly, and David, you probably understand this too, just the networking side of having a podcast has been great, because while a lot of our guests we have known already, and that's why they're on, there's been an equal amount that we've never met before and just identified them as people who are doing great work. So to be able to make those contacts now, for both of us is kind of good selfishly. And then I think a lot of people, not that this is to credit us or anything like that, I think a lot of people weren't really familiar with UE. I think beating Kentucky last year helped a lot, but I've just seen, even going through a couple of, job searches for candidates at UE, the amount of people who were familiar or even directly referenced the show was kind of surprising to me. So I think it's kind of UE on a platform to show specifically what we're doing, and a lot of people that maybe not have gotten eyes on that before are now seeing some of the good stuff that we do.
Yeah, for me it was kind of like I gained friends and mentors out of it, which was a really weird, because like I said, I started this when I was 21 years old. It's been 4 years, so I'm 25 now, going on 26. So selfishly, I used to not say like, oh no, it's not, you know, I don't have any sort of motivation for that. But honestly, I just like meeting the new people too. And I started this, and I don't know if you guys can relate on the same way, but I started this also because I had real bad social anxiety years ago. I mumbled a lot, and I wanted to get back into play-by-play. That's how I initially started sports information. I mumbled a lot. I didn't have a tape when I got to USI, so they were like, you need to do something to kind of, you know, open up your vocal cords, be confident in your own voice, and this was a way to do it. I don't know if you guys felt the same way or anything like that, but just when I would make a list, and I still do this. I still make a list of people I want to have on, and I would email them. And I would, even if people are listening to the show right now and you see somebody on Twitter, we always kind of reference the Twitter friends and things like that you've never met in real life, right? I mean, we've all got them. So just shoot them an email. It's not that awkward. And even if you need an excuse like a podcast, I mean, go ahead and go do it. That's all I have to say. But I that's how I used to start out, was just I needed a way to get out of my own bubble in my own way, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to that. I am not a great public speaker. I did debate in high school, but I was just doing that for a credit. And it just, yeah, I'm a very shy, introverted person by nature. I think this podcast has been an awesome way to grow those aspects, because I even was talking with our ESPN guys the other day that I was like, if you needed a new a person to talk on camera, just let me know, which is something I would never have done previously.
Did that surprise you when you said that?
A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. I always like hearing growth stories like that. Those are fun.
Yeah, I agree, though. I mean, I'm definitely a few years older than you guys. Not too much, but I mean, I was the same way. I don't know. If you would have told me probably 10 years ago that I was doing a podcast, I would never have believed you. In fact, before we started our own podcast, I had volunteered to be on a couple others and have done it before, which, again, would have never done. I taught a class at UE for the first time this semester. Another thing I would have never even considered. You know, I have been on some of the Evansville ESPN broadcasts. So those are things that would have freaked me out in college probably. But it's not so bad. Like, you just got to get out and try it. And as you try it, you grow, you get better. So, you know, they say doing hard things is how you grow and get better. So if you're thinking about doing something that's hard and that's what's preventing you, I highly recommend you give it a try, and I think it won't be as bad as you think.
I like when people do something like this, and people, you know, do things that they're interested in. I have a friend who lives out in Montana. He's gotten really big into rock climbing, and I'm not talking like, you know, going to what was it called? Vertical Escape in Evansville. I took a rock climbing class there, but he's gotten into the stuff that it's like slanted like this over a body of water, and he lives in Montana, so it's not warm water, y'all. So like when he's done, he's at the top, he just drops in the water, and I've seen like kind of his growth, and it's been so cool to see just the confidence that people get when they try something new, especially when you get into your own voice. I have a book called the Assertiveness Workbook, and it has a lot less to do with being an a-hole or anything like that, and it has a lot more to do with your voice, and it gives you exercises to where, like, if you go in a store, you have to ask somebody, hey, what specials do you have going on? Or do you have any deals or anything? And when they say, no, we don't really have anything, you just say, oh, okay, cool, just ask. And that's all there is to it. It's amazing to see the confidence and the avenues that you open up for yourself once you be able to do uncomfortable things, like you said, Scott.
What was the name of that again?
The Assertiveness Workbook.
Gosh, that's cool. I hadn't heard of that.
Yeah, it's a pretty pretty interesting little thing. Not to toot my own horn, I might cut this out, but I had an intern at Indiana to where one of her New Year's resolutions, which I don't like New Year's resolutions, but one of her resolutions was to, you know, be more assertive. And she was having a group member that was kind of bullying her a little bit into, like, you know, not doing work or whatever. I mean, y'all have had those group members, right? I don't know. You might even work with some people like that, but, and I told her about it, and then I told her, I was like, I've never actually read this. And I have it on my nightstand. I was like, I never actually read this. And she goes, well, you don't need it. And which is surprising because nobody would have ever said that to me 4 or 5 years ago. And it's funny how, like I was saying, like things just happen for you when you kind of grow into yourself a little bit. So talk to me guys about the Kentucky game. I want to tell you where I was at after you guys tell me. I was telling you my story and then you guys tell me how this was going. But I always tell people, like, we played Indiana Wesleyan, which is like the number two or number three team. Hell, they might as well be the number one team in the NAI. I mean, they could probably rival some Division I guys. I don't know if you've heard of them or not, but with Kyle Mangus down there. But I was like, what if we beat them? And my people keep saying, hey, we're probably not. I'm like, yeah, but what if we do? So what does that conversation look like for you guys? Did you have that talk at all? I'm sure your plan was nothing new. And you guys, I mean, talk me through it. Emotion, everything leading up to that point. How did it happen?
Well, I think it goes back to, like you said, a couple days before the game. It was November 12th, 2019, if anybody doesn't have that date marked in their calendar. We sat, I think, in Scott's office or a conference room or something, and we were like, we're not going to win. We have no business winning this game, but what if we did? Like you said, and so we had a plan. We had, luckily, almost our entire external staff was able to go because Lexington's very close to Evansville. And so we had everything lined out, and we were like, let's just play along and say, what are we going to do if we win? And so when we got to Lexington after a very series of events that just kind of lined up in our favor and kind of showed the signs of maybe this could happen, we got there and saw our team come out of the tunnel, and our team just did not care. They were not fazed at all that they were at Rupp Arena. Like they had zero cares, and they came out and played incredibly well. So I think any actual plan we had a plan, but I think it kind of went out the window as soon as we saw them start playing, because they had the confidence and we realized, hey, we maybe could happen, but it was like, oh, it's also Kentucky, and so they could go on a run at any point. So I was on the baseline shooting photos for most of the game, so my memory of the game is very fuzzy. I remember like one or two like key plays. And I remember the buzzer going off and then pointing my camera at anything purple, because I was like, I just have to capture all of this because this is never happening again. One, Kentucky's never going to play us again. So I just have to document everything. And I went back to the locker room, did the celebration, came back out, and saw we were trending on Twitter. And we had posted like the upset alert. So it was very surreal the entire time. And then I just stood there for like 3 seconds and I was like, we haven't posted a final score graphic. And so it took off from there. But the next 48 hours, we eclipsed over 2.3 million impressions on Twitter. People were tweeting at us being like, who's Evansville? What's Evansville? What's going on? We were able to, because we planned ahead, we were able to show who UE was or is to the nation and really the world. So I think that is really the basis of Evansville's Power Five mentality. Bringing it back to the podcast conversation, we had no other option but to be a bigger athletic department than we were, because we were on that stage, but we were prepared for it, which was really cool. Scott has a different perspective on all of it than I was, because he was live tweeting the game. But
David, thank you for asking. It's my favorite thing in the world to talk about.
That's fine. I always love it when somebody beats Kentucky, trust me.
Well, University of Louisville alum here, so this one was extra sweet. I mean, it's just a storybook with them being literally number one, and it's at Rupp Arena, and it's, you know, the eighth smallest Division I school in the country against just a power like Kentucky. So like Emily said, we had a ton of people travel, which is very unlike us on a normal game. So we usually would just have our radio guys and then Bob Pristash, our men's basketball SID. But Emily went. You know, Emily was taking photos. I ended up live tweeting, you know, score updates and things like that, which is not something I normally do. But so to do that under the biggest microscope we've ever had was a little stressful. Michael Robertson, not sure if you know him. He also went to USI. Yep. He was clipping highlights right next to me. We had Braden Pretch on the video side, pumping out a couple videos, which again is not something we normally have the time or resources to do. And then we had our two interns and our ticket guy go more as fans for them, but they were there as extra hands as well. So a lot of the in-game stuff, similar to what Emily said, just so surreal. You know, as soon as the game ended, we did have a ticket offer already in mind in case we won. So we emailed that out. And so our ticket guys, you know, texting people at midnight on the way back, selling tickets. We ended up selling like 150 season tickets in like 24 hours, which for us is incredible. We ended up planning a team return welcome type of thing. And again, this is like midnight by the time we get back. So we only have about 2,000 students at Evansville. I would say at least 10% of them were in the parking lot waiting for us when we got there. There were head coaches of some of the other sports. I mean, just everybody was there. You know, I thought they were going to shake the bus and push it over. One of the players gets out, stands on somebody's Honda Civic and gives a speech about how he wants all these people at the next game. So we go home. Can't really sleep, so it was kind of pointless to go home, I guess. So we come back pretty early. We ended up planning a like donut reception with the mascot in the president's office first thing in the morning. We threw a pep rally together by lunchtime, which had I have no idea how many people were there, but hundreds and hundreds, if not a thousand people, were packed into this this big room on campus. Media fans, students, everything was lined up the whole building. The pep band of cheer ended up coming. So just throwing all that together was crazy. But then we also played 48 hours later. I think Kentucky was a Tuesday. We played IU Kokomo on a Thursday. So that alone, that quick turnaround is a lot of work just to get ready. So we still had all that to do. We ended up having, I don't know, a couple hundred students for a game like that, which, of course, on the when you get the schedule preseason, you know, like, how am I going to get people to this game? And then all of a sudden, it was one of the highest attended games of the year. So it was just a blur, really. And, you know, there's been some unfortunate things that happened afterwards that we don't need to get into, but we'll always have that memory for sure. And, you know, I fully expect 20 years from now to be talking about this, just like it was last year.
I had to look it up, and that's what I was doing. I forget who we were playing. I was at an IU game. I was working, and we were playing North Alabama, and I remember sitting in my little, like, kind of like a commons area, and we always had these TVs, and it's mostly to watch the IU game to make sure that, you know, how we're handling it. But one, we have an Evansville native who now works for the Phoenix Suns. His name is Brandon Spahn, and he turned it on. And I have never heard him cheer before. And I was just hearing him behind his little kind of like soundproof glass, whatever. And I turned and y'all had just won. And I'm gonna be real with everybody and you too, Scott. I grew up a Louisville fan, so I know kind of the emotion of that. Absolutely amazing moment. But like you kind of said, Emily, you paused for a few seconds and realized, oh, I didn't post a final score graphic. I'm sure Richmond had this same feeling a few weeks ago, and I don't know who else has done the upsets since then. But how do you kind of keep emotion away from that? And I mean, obviously, you can't just, you know, be robotic about it, but how do you kind of separate your letting yourself, you know, enjoy the moment versus you still have a job to do in those types of situations?
I think someone asked me a couple weeks ago, like, what I would have done differently in that moment. And honestly, I think I would have let myself enjoy it just a little bit longer. But I think it's a weird balance because you, like, on social media, you want to show the personality of the team. And so you have to show that emotion and you have to have that emotion, but you have to balance it with like still being professional and not like calling people, like we had no leg to stand on other than that we would be number one. Like we had we were just enjoying it. I don't think it was really that hard to keep that balance because our team was they weren't phased. Like I said earlier, they weren't phased. They thought they belonged there. And so they had every emotion that was right for that situation. I think, at least for me, because I, at that point, I was only at UE for 6 months at that point, because I started in June of 2019. So this was my second men's basketball game. And so I knew the history, I knew what was going on, but it didn't really impact me, other than when I walked out of the locker room and I saw Scott crying and our AD hugging it was just hugging everybody. And so I think it was a secondhand emotion for me, but also just enjoying the history that we were able to be a part of.
To be honest, I went like 3 months without, I couldn't think about that game without getting teary eyed. I think it's, you know, I've been there almost 7 years now, and, you know, a lot of ups and downs, and that's just a lot of hard work from a lot of people. And, you know, that win had nothing to do with anyone on our side of things. That was all the team. But just to see them do that was incredible. I mean, you got to keep in mind that 2 years before that, I went to the game at Duke and we lost by 64, I think. And it's, you know, it's 2 years later, we're now beating number one. So when you think of it that way and kind of some of the stuff we had been through, like Emily said, I do think we did a pretty good job considering the magnitude of everything, of balancing that. I think there were some times where, you know, you walk by a TV and it's our coach doing a live post game on ESPN. And, you know, we got back to campus and ESPN is on and they're doing an, you know, it's not a 15-second highlight. They're spending, you know, 3.5 minutes breaking down the game with Seth Greenberg. That's not something we get with our highlights ever. So, you know, I really think that I did a good job of soaking it in, because I knew, well, even throughout before it was over, like I understood the magnitude. So, you know, I think we did a really good job balancing that, but still enjoying it and being able to remember it.
What was the digital media presence like when the world caught wind? Hey, you are in a close one right now. And how did you handle that?
Well, Scott probably can talk to this a little bit more, because he was actually on Twitter, but I vividly remember, I think someone on our group text going, "We're trending on Twitter." And I'm like, "What?" Like,
yeah. And then we were number two at one point, and then we were number one, and then, you know, it's Dick Vitale and it's ESPN and it's SportsCenter and all these people. You know, the first few you don't think a whole lot of, and when you're live at a game like that, I think you lose track of like the rest of the world also being involved, at least watching or tweeting about or whatever it may be. So you lose sight of some of that just being in the building. But just as seeing us move up the trending list and just everything and everybody who was talking about us, you know, I had friends I hadn't talked to in years asking if that was my Evansville that won. I was like, yeah, that was us. You know, we had Zach from UMBC, shout out to him, reach out, and he was super gracious and said, you know, I've been through something like this before, let me know how I can help. And he actually was our first guest on Power Five Mentality to kind of bring that full circle. So it was just awesome. It was just, you know, it's a once in a lifetime type of thing. I think we treated it that way. And I'm sure a lot of people deserve wins like that, but I felt we did too. So I was really happy for everyone involved.
Yeah. And awesome. Even post game, like driving back, we were racing the bus, trying to get back to Evansville. Like Michael's car basically turned into the center of college basketball for those 2 hours or whatever it was driving home. Me sitting in the back, putting out graphics, and we were just trying to capitalize on everything that we could. I think we did a pretty good job looking back at that.
Yeah. Pretty cool moment. Again, not very many people get to do it. So I think you two did pull it off very well, just as many other schools have, including Zach, who was actually giving me dog advice, and he hasn't been on my show yet. So y'all did a fantastic job. So yeah, well, this actually kind of poured into more of a time than I was hoping for, but we're just going to go for it anyway. It's already late. Talk to me about how you guys got to this point. And I know we just talked about a lot of emotional stuff, you know, for the highs and the lows for the both of you during COVID and during the Kentucky game. But how did you both get to this point? I know, Emily, you kind of mentioned you're at the Big 12. Scott, I know you stayed at Louisville grad, past 7 years at UE, which I don't know if – I interned there for a year, and I don't know if you were there or not. I can't remember. I can barely remember anybody.
I thought you looked and sounded familiar from a name standpoint. I don't know that we interacted. I would have definitely been in the ticket office at that point, so I don't think we probably would have crossed paths too much. But I thought that when you said you went to USI, I was like, that's got to be the same David that was around.
Yeah, that was probably me. I work with Clay a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually had the Western Kentucky game on above me here, and he's working that. I saw, so he's on the screen above me while we're talking about
it. Oh, is he really? That's funny. Yeah, we'll get to everybody's background here, but Scott, since you mentioned it, I mean, you went from ticketing to the marketing transition. What was that like for you?
Yeah, so I'll make the beginning of the story quick, but like I said, went to Louisville, had, you know, some marketing, some community relations type of internships, but spent the last full year in the ticket office, which would have been 2013, which was a super fun year to be involved in that athletic department with championships and Sugar Bowl wins and all that. So had always kind of planned on going the marketing route. I was a marketing minor, all that. But having done that internship, I kind of got to the end of the year and realized, you know, my only chance of getting a foot in the door in this industry is the experience I have, which is ticketing. So, you know, I liked it. It wasn't necessarily my passion. So I went that route. I spent a little over a year in Tampa at the University of South Florida as a ticket sales account executive, which 13 months was a perfect amount of time for that. I wouldn't have wanted to do it much longer, but, you know, we talked about getting out of our comfort zones. That's 80 calls a day, 2 face-to-face meetings a week type of quotas. That's all we did. So best experience I could have had, although I definitely got enough at that time. So at that point, you know, I got married as a junior in college. You know, we knew we wanted to start a family, didn't want to do that 14 hours away from home. So started looking at places closer, actually applied for a job at Louisville in their ticket office, didn't get it. But woman who worked there actually had the job at Evansville like a decade before, and she steered me that way. So I'll admit I knew nothing about Evansville from a school community or anything else. I just knew it was 2 hours from home and it was, you know, a director level job. I took a shot at it, ended up getting it, moved there. So just like I said, I've been there 7 years now, just about. The first 4 years in the ticket office, which again, great experience. And then I had the opportunity when the position opened to slide into marketing, which, like I said at the beginning, was what I wanted to do all along. That move was almost simultaneous to us signing with Learfield and hiring a new basketball coach. So it was kind of nice to hit reset and kind of go all out on that. So just recently kind of got elevated again into more of a broad external role while still really doing all the same marketing stuff I was doing before. So I couldn't be happier here. Our family's happy too. You know, David, you're familiar with Evansville. It sounds like you enjoyed it a lot. So I'm happy. We're loving the Aces. We're doing the best we can. And we have a really, really good, you know, I said I've been here 7 years, by far the best group we've had collectively in that time. So that's what's exciting too, is we have a really good group.
Emily, how about you? I know you mentioned Big 12. We got some Missouri State stuff in there. So how'd you end up in the Aces office?
Well, I started out in sports basically from day one, as long as I could hold a ball. But I realized quickly I was not qualified to play sports long term. So going into undergrad, I went to Kansas State University. I grew up a K-State fan, so definitely from the Kansas side. But I found my way into the sports information department, had absolutely no idea what that was going into it, but I fell in love with it, and I was like, I'm totally okay with not going to games as a student. So followed that through all 4 years at K-State, gaining experience at different volunteer things with the Big 12, and then after graduating Kansas State, after 2 years of being a student assistant with the women's golf team, I got the Will Hancock Communications Assistant position at the Big 12 Conference, worked there for a year doing a bunch of different championships, and then I was like, I probably should get a master's so I can move up in the world, and so I went back to school at Missouri State for 2 years, graduated there in 2019, and then I was already in the Missouri Valley, so it was a great connection. Didn't know a ton about Evansville, kind of like what Scott was saying. I didn't know a lot about it, but it was a great opportunity for me to grow as an SID, but also grow as a creative and graphic designer, which was definitely something I wanted to explore more and go more into. And it gave me the opportunity to do both. And so landed here in June of 2019 and been loving it ever since, and being able to elevate our social media to brand new heights that UE hasn't had the opportunity to do. So that's a basic summary of me.
What's it like kind of aligning both of your goals? I mean, obviously, Scott, your marketing department obviously has goals that you want to hit. How do you guys kind of work together with the athletic communications office, and Emily, vice versa?
Yeah, I mean, I think we work really well together. We've mentioned a couple of times how small we are, and David, from your around, you probably saw that. But I think that plays to our advantage a lot of times. There's not silos, there's not things that get lost in the shuffle. You know, everyone's usually on the same page at the same time. So it makes communication really easy. It's basically just popping your head out of the office, which we all do about 5 times a day, and just kind of communicating that way. So honestly, I think we have a really good setup the way that we are. I mean, of course, we could use more people, just like everybody else, but I think there's advantages to being such a small group. And honestly, that's helped us out a lot.
Yeah, I've been in a unique situation the last few months. Is I got a title change, and so I'm kind of halfway in between SID and like I help Scott a lot with marketing, and so I think that's helped a little bit of the communication and helped me as someone trying to make graphics and social media that I can communicate with both sides simultaneously. So kind of that hybrid role, which comes with some challenges, but it's also it's been very, very helpful. And I think it's been very helpful for like the department at large, because it just made everything a little bit easier to communicate with each other.
Yeah. I got a title change as well. And they added marketing and promotions to mine. I'm also 25% marketing for the university as well. So I'm in like a really weird situation too. But I guess this always happens. I always have a theme. So getting out of your comfort zone. I mean, Emily, for you, title change, new stuff. You mentioned the challenges and maybe things that you hadn't worked with before. So what's that been like for you in that transition?
Well, it's I say title change and changes, but it was mostly kind of just formalizing what I was already doing. Like right. I said earlier, it was, I'm 50-50, like a SID and like a social media graphic designer. And so it basically just formalized and made it more official that's what I was doing. It's a hard balance between like the SID side and social media, because sometimes your SID stuff has to happen and you have to not do this or the social media stuff. I don't know how to really explain it, but my sports are women's soccer, track and field, and swimming and diving. So I haven't really had a home event that I'm responsible for SID wise since last November. But it's also balancing all of the social media demands with coaches and making sure that they have what they need, while also working home into women's basketball games and doing all of the social media level stuff at the same time. So I think it's challenged me to be very organized and very like prioritize what needs to happen on a day-to-day basis, but also making sure I communicate with everybody and make sure I have an organized social media schedule so nothing gets lost in the shuffle.
I'm curious both of your answers to this, and this is something that I talked with my boss about today. What we plan to do is survey our stakeholders, our students, our athletes, our coaches, et cetera, to find what they value, not in just the sports information and marketing department, but as their experiences on game day, their experiences with our social media, things like that. So, when you guys are expanding your department, or you're looking to fill a position, or you're looking to take on just an intern or a student worker, what are things that you guys kind of prioritize as far as like responsibilities and duties and focus. Like if you are going to focus more on the digital side, Emily, you don't necessarily need somebody that is a really, really good writer, right? Like that's their strong suit. Like that's their cornerstone. So how are you guys kind of, as you shift more to a digital visual, I do like your graphics, visual strategy, it seems to me, on the outside. How are you helping that kind of within your office, maybe bringing in people to diversify that a little bit?
Yeah, I'll let Emily, I think this is a good time to talk about some of the coach social media meetings in terms of getting feedback from them. The only thing I'll mention for this year, for example, as soon as we were told, you know, we're not selling tickets, you know, we're limited to like 80 for women's basketball, 500 for men's basketball, although most games, since a lot of those tickets are set aside for students, we'll only have, you know, 200 or 300. Our focus this year has been all about salvaging as much of the student athlete experience as possible. So while before our mindset may be, oh, we got to get fans to this game, we got to sell tickets, we got to entertain, you know, fans in a certain way, a lot of those things were either eliminated because there aren't many people there, or that because we had to due to COVID. So our focus became, how do we make this as good of an experience as possible for the student athletes? So that's why we kept things like, we went all out on our intro video. We did, you know, the smoke machines during starting lineups. We still have our DJ come to the game. We've actually now added a DJ for women's basketball that we didn't have before. So little things like that to just make them feel as special as possible, you know, and it's kind of been refreshing and fun to just, you know, throw away some of that other stuff. You know, sponsorship side, we're a little more watered down than usual and have less requirements in venue at least. So to kind of throw all that aside and say, okay, how can we make this as enjoyable as possible for student athletes? It's actually been really great.
Yeah, like Scott was talking about, a very cool thing that kind of happened coming out of COVID and not having fall sports was I had time to kind of focus on our social media and our social media branding. During like the time period of working from home, I made it kind of my mission to create a UE social media branding guide that just kind of was the one-stop shop for absolutely anything you need to know about UE social media, to make it as easy as possible for our coaches who, I don't love this, but that they have to run their social media sometimes. They have to produce a lot of our content. But I wanted to make it as easy as possible because I know what our resources are. And so I sent that out in about August 1st and basically gave it to the coaches for about a month. And then we sat down the month of September and a little bit in October and talked to all of our head coaches and talk through what our brand standards are and what resources they have to achieve what we're asking for them. But also during that, we tried to find out what personality are those teams want to portray on social media. And so that was a really cool experience because we got to know our teams that we were around every day, but get to know them on a deeper level. Like our men's basketball team wants to focus on togetherness and being a unit versus just a single individual. That's not something I would have just come up with by myself, but having that social media meeting with the coaching staff and just with all of our teams, we were able to come up with what they want to see on social media and figure out how we could use the resources that we have to achieve those goals. But also equipping them to achieve the goals themselves. Basically giving them the tools to make UE social media the best it could be. I think we've already seen the results of that. Our numbers have gone up across the board. So I think just being all on the same page and all realizing that we're all on the same team was really the goal and really I think what was successful out of those meetings.
Because we kind of do the same thing, right? So obviously I don't like this idea as well. I have 22 sports. I help with every single one of them. I'm not the football SID, but I work with football literally every single day. I do have coaches that kind of go rogue on me sometimes, it feels like, even after, and you guys are smiling. So even after I already talked to them, they're making hashtags. I don't want to call anybody out because I never know, but like they're making graphics in PowerPoint and then posting those. So what are kind of the hurdles that you guys have had? Maybe some helpful or progressive conversations that you've had with them to kind of iron things out, I guess.
I think I related to everything you just said. Our coaches are great. They try and I appreciate them. But we've just been trying to put systems in place to make sure that one, our brand is represented correctly on social media, and two, they have all the resources they need to do that. And so I created a basic Dropbox and put all of our backgrounds, our fonts, our logos, everything they need to know, and just like our branding guide in there as well. And during the social media meetings, we talked about who has like Photoshop experience and who has social media experience. So I know who to communicate to on those coaching staffs. I found that really helpful because I now know that our baseball assistant coach is really good at graphics. So I can go to him and be like, hey, I don't have time to do this. You are fully capable of doing this. You have all the information you need. I think it's having grace and giving opportunities to grow for the coaches, but also not being okay if they miss the mark. We have a system that they have to get any graphic or video that they're posting approved before they can post it. So they have to send it to Scott, me, or Michael, and we look at it brand-wise. And if it's good, they can post it. If not, we'll send them basic edits to make it okay. And if it doesn't get approved, or if they post something that's not approved, then we pull it down. And if they do it repeatedly, then they might or might not lose access to their social media account. Which is all laid out to them. And so I think it's just being very forthcoming and very, like we've been talking about, communicating to them and saying, these are your standards. Do your best to fulfill them.
I actually just texted my boss when we were sitting here about stuff like that. So I love that. We have a lot of I don't know if you guys have the same thing. We have a lot of like undergrad student interns. We have a team that has a sophomore graphic design major, mind you, that does a lot of committed graphics for them. They are absolutely zero on brand. Like they pulled a logo from Google using the wrong colors. Like they're just using, you know, I'm sure y'all can relate, but like flames in the background, you know, things like that, that have zero to do with a small private Catholic college in the middle of Michigan. So, I mean, I guess it is about the communications. You're absolutely right. And as much as I guess we talked about being a server earlier, right? It is appropriate. If somebody is not up to your standards, to kind of say, hey, we need to reel this back a little bit. You keep doing this. Absolutely. We need to take it away from you. Maybe even have that written out. What a lot of SIDs have right now, and with the struggle that I had in the very beginning, not so much now, coaches have done it one way a long time. They've ran their social media a long time. They've done their own marketing for their teams a long time. And then someone comes in, a young kid comes in and just says, hey, you're not doing it that way anymore. That's tough for a lot of people too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not personal, right? Like that's the thing. Right. It's like, this isn't because I don't like you. This isn't because you don't have graphic design skills even. It's about, you know, we have standards laid out. What you did or didn't do didn't meet that. And, you know, it's that simple. It doesn't have to become a personal thing. And I think that's where we've gotten a little bit better, is just communication in general with the coaches. And I think those social media meetings kind of kicked that off. Like, you know, we are here to support you. When we can't, let's equip you to do it yourself. And if that is the case, here's the things you need to do. Who can and can't do it? What do you need to be able to do it? So we've kind of come a long way in the last few months on that. But it's always a constant battle for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, like coaches always have the best intentions, and they're always going to try for their teams. And so I think knowing that and understanding that is half the battle. Because I'm not sure where I'm going with that, but I think it's a give and take. Because we're always going to fight for our brand and our logo, and just like they're always going to fight for their program. So making sure everyone knows and appreciates that we're all on the same team, fighting for the same thing, I think is what we've been trying to do the last few months.
Awesome. Y'all, we've been talking for about 50 minutes now. I would like to transition this part of the interview. I like to ask fun questions if you guys would like to. If you have some more things you want to talk about, tell me now or forever hold your peace.
I think we're good.
Everybody satisfied? Yeah. Awesome. Well, like I said, these are actually double the questions I usually ask because I've got two people on. This is the second time I've ever done this. So favorite memory of professional tenure? If it's Kentucky for both of you, we're going to move right on.
100%.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, what about on the other side of the coin for you guys? What's your biggest horror story if you have one?
Well, it's a long story. Basically, we just ended it. So last night we had a 22-game losing streak for the men. We actually had a 20, I think, game losing streak for the women at the same time. So that was tough. You know, at the beginning of that for the men's side, we had to let our coach go for some not so good reasons. So, you know, we went 9-4, beat Murray State, beat Kentucky, beat Ball State, all these people in the non-conference, feeling good about ourselves going into Christmas. And you get a call, you know, day after Christmas, and then you never win a game again. That is, unfortunately, that was almost a year long story, but that's it for sure for me.
For me, it's both a horror story, but I'm also really proud of myself, how I responded to it. Okay. Like I talked about earlier, I worked at the Big 12 for a year, and one of my sports was wrestling, and it was the Big 12's second year ever being a neutral site championship. Wrestling at the Big 12, there's only like four schools that are actually in the Big 12. We have a lot of affiliates for that, and so it was a mess trying to get enough SID, all the SIDs put together and on the same page. But we get there, and the graphics are getting like played up on the video board and like on the ribbon board and all of that. And one of the ribbon boards, which had like the names of each student athlete on them, was just stretched all the way around. It was supposed to be like reflected on itself. And so it stretched all the way around the ribbon board. And I had to go to my boss, and who was the head of, or like the administrator for the tournament, and tell him, we can't put that up there. It was very stressful because he was like, well, it's happening. We paid for them. It's happening. So I, as a kid, like less than 6 months out of college, I was freaking out. And I felt like I was a failure because I didn't approve those graphics. I had no control over those graphics, but I felt like I had the whole weight of the world on my shoulders. But it turned out fine, and we got the graphics remade, but it was definitely probably the biggest horror moments of my career at that point. It was crazy.
Yeah, I will tell you a story to make you feel better. I'll tell you two stories. It'll give you a laugh before we all go to bed. Actually, it's not that late for y'all. It's late for me, but I was at a wrestling meet. This was my first ever wrestling meet. I was at an NAIA school. I had wrestling in Indiana, but I was at an NAIA school. And when like stat wrestling, is that what it's called? I've never actually stat wrestling. No, it wasn't flow. It was like, we're in AI, so it was like, I don't remember. But it gave the matchups across the bar. And I read, and my job was to take the PA and say who was next on mat 1, 2, 3, whatever. And I was a 19-year-old kid. And both of these stories actually come when I was 19, so I wonder what happened then. But one kid I announced, and then I announced his opponent, as forfeit, and it was a forfeit. And I was like, I thought it was some French dude's name. Like, so I'm like trying to pronounce it all fancy, like, you know, That was an embarrassing moment. And then my dumbass just like, oh, Dave, that was like, that was a forfeit. You know, that gives us automatically advances. Second story to make you feel better. The beautiful, you know, like the computer with the music at hockey. I go to press the national anthem, and y'all know where I'm going with this. It doesn't play. And it just gives a ding noise, you know, that like hellish noise. And we have a site administrator. I think she was also a cheer coach at the time. And she said, she grabs the mic and she tells everybody, we're going to sing it together. Well, nobody in the crowd is singing it. She forgets the words halfway through. And I'm the only person singing the national anthem in this huge arena for a hockey game in front of everybody. Those are my two that I'm like, I'd love to forget. But of course, you never do, right?
That's tough, David.
Yeah. What's one thing you're each interested in to learn more about in this profession or in your respective fields?
I think for me, it would be graphic design, ironically. I know we've talked a lot about that, and almost nothing of what you see from us has anything to do with me outside of editing templates that Emily also makes. So that's something that we actually worked on a little bit on the summer, and then, you know, now that we're all the way in it, kind of lost time. So being able to get to the point where I'm proficient enough to kind of create a nice graphic from scratch instead of just editing templates, that's one small goal for me.
And it's funny that I'm going to say this. I'm actually very interested in marketing and script writing, which is exactly what Scott does. And so I think it just is my next step in learning about college athletics and making sure I'm in the right part, like section of it. But I'm also just super curious and interested in just running a game, like being on headset and telling people to play music when and all of that. And just, yeah.
Coordination, yeah.
When the music doesn't play.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. We actually had that happen again at USI, but the volleyball, it was at a volleyball game, and the volleyball official was also on an acapella. So he just took over. He just ran with it, man. Like that was the best case scenario. That was fun. When you both aren't in the office, what do you do to have fun?
Are you implying that we're not in the office at all times? I think for me, it's hard to even remember back when things were normal what we did, but definitely spending time with my son is number one for me. And he's 5 and a half now.
Yeah, it's hard to be like, yeah, this is what I do, because it feels like 2020 is an alternate universe. But yeah. Definitely binge watching Netflix and making sure my cat doesn't destroy my apartment. I think that's where I'm at right now. Yeah.
What's your Scott? What's your son's name? And Emily, what's your cat's name?
Son's name is Rowan, Rowan. I also have two cats. And we call them Big and Little because one's bigger than the other one.
My cat is named Button, and I got her back in April, so she's a very, very kitten.
So she's a pandemic pet, or pandemic friend is what they're calling them. Yeah. My cat is a – go ahead.
Her name is Button because she literally just sits on me all the time. Like, that's just her default, is just to sit on me, like, or like on my like shoulder or something, like a button. So that's her name now.
I have a cat. His name's Tuck. And when we got him at the shelter, his name was Fuzz Aldrin. So I was like, we got to get this kid out of here. Like, we're not going to let him go through that. I wish he could sit on me now, but he's 20 pounds. He's a big boy. Like, it's not like girth, you know what I mean? Well, it is, but it's not like belly fat. He's just a big cat. And I remember when he was a kitten, his paws were too big for his body. So he had to like prance everywhere, and it was like the best thing ever. So yeah. That's enough about our cat stories. But I know my answers to these, and I could go on and on, but I won't. Restaurant or bar recommendation next time somebody is in Evansville?
Mr. B's. We were just there for lunch today. Yes, Mr. B's. Good pizza, wings kind of place. And a bar, so.
You know, I think when I, if and when I ever leave Evansville, Taroni's will always be the thing that I crave. Oh, yeah. So shout out to the Weinbach Taroni's. That would be my answer.
Awesome. Cool. Well, if somebody had any questions for either one of you and wanted to follow both of you, what would be the best way to do it?
I'm a big Twitter person, not as big on anything else. I am at Scott_Peace.
I'm the same, but I'm also on Instagram and Twitter, Emily_MCM16.
All right. Awesome. Well, Scott and Emily, thank you very much for coming on. We all really do appreciate it.
Can I plug, nice to be on the other side of things.
Yes. Can I plug Power 5 account?
Absolutely. Yes. I was going to do it in the intro too.
Okay. Well, you can also reach Scott and I with any questions or podcast guest recommendations at P5 Mentality on both Twitter and Instagram. And you can find us online at Power 5 Mentality websites and look for us on any of your podcast streaming apps and all of that.
All right, will do. Thanks again, guys.